This KFK podcast is presented by Bank of Colorado. There's only one Greeley, one team like the UNC Bears, and one bank who cheers as loud as you do. Bank of Colorado, proud partner of UNC Athletics, member FDIC.
Okay, guys, the Rockies are starting to scare me again. Five losses in a row. Fought back. Made it interesting. We're not out for interesting, Mike. We need to get closer because I'm starting to get to the point now where the beard's starting to get there. Hair's fine still, but we'll see. I'm scared, nervous.
Beard's fine.
For now, yeah, for now. We say that now. But we're not getting any closer this week. We need to get a couple of dubs. I got some Broncos stuff today that I want to go through. Patrick Saunders had an interesting story in the Denver Post answering some questions you might have about the Penner Group being 40% owners now. What will that actually mean for Dick Monfort? We'll get Nuggets, Timberwolves stuff, how to stop Anthony Edwards. The whole show starts now. I mean, Rockies lose 7-6, but there, you know, we've got the challenge thing now. We have the challenge thing taking place, and I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it, Mike. Just seems like it feels like they get way more challenges. Now, obviously, if they win one, they just get it right back, but it just feels like we're doing a lot of that. Well, there was an interesting sequence in this game. Tovar's on first base, and the He's attempting to steal second, and I believe it was it Sullivan or Rumfield? I think it was Rumfield. He actually gets to a point where it's a full count, 3-2, and pitch happens. Tovar goes to steal, and then it's caught in the middle of the steal. So he's like right in the middle of first base and second base. Umpire calls ball. So then they throw, you know, catcher throws to second base. Looks like he'd have Tovar out. But it's a ball, right? But the catcher review, he pats his head and says, we want to review it. Well, the problem is, and I believe this is the first time it's happened in a game. On a, you know, you're trying to steal a base and they call a ball. Well, if you think it's a ball, Mike, how are you running that bait? How are you running to second base? You're not sliding. You're just going to go, oh, it's a ball, just trot on over to second because I was going to be here anyway, right? So instead, catcher says, we're challenging it. So Tovar slows up and he's like, it's a ball, and doesn't slide. But he would have been out. So they review the play. Now, it worked out for the Rockies because it was confirmed that it was a ball. But if it was overturned and if it was actually a strike, then that would have been a double play that would have ended the inning. And Tovar would have been like, dude, you called it a ball. So I'm operating on the fact that you called it a ball. I mean, are you telling me I can't steal a base if it's a full count? If there are three balls on the sequence, am I not supposed to attempt a steal at that point? Maybe that's the new rule coming in, because I believe this is the first kind of hiccup in this. Now, again, it turned out right for the Rockies, and it turned out right for the team in question. But if it were the opposite way, I would have some serious beef, because I'm saying I wasn't running hard anymore. I wasn't going to slide, because that I'm not going to take the chance of getting hurt or anything, so I'm not going to slide at that point. That was a fascinating one last night.
It should go as it is called by the umpire. So if you were going to get tagged out if it was going to be a strike and they call it a ball, you have to treat it like it's a ball.
Even if they overturn it?
If you overturn it, what happens with the umpire?
I think you just put him back to first base.
Yeah.
You just say it's a reset. It's a reset,
yeah,
basically.
You act as if what happened on the field did not happen.
I think that's a good point.
It just has to be that way.
Yeah, that's what you have to do. In that sequence, if you are stealing a base on a three-ball situation and it turns out to be a ball, but there's a challenge and you're not running through. Now, there's going to be people say, well, just run through. You know, but I'm not going to run through and slide and potentially hurt myself or potentially hurt the second baseman on a walk-through play. So anyway, that was a side note of this game. Michael, let's get to the good, the bad, the ugly, presented by FMS Bank, banking made simple. For more, check them out online at fmsbank.com/KFKA. The good for me, what was good? It was a heck of a comeback. I mean, they made it not a heck of a comeback. They were up 3-0 at one point, Mike. I guess let's say the Avs winning. The Avs beating Calgary last night 3-1. I gotta be honest, I'm really out of it until we start the playoffs. The Avs have one game remaining, and that's against Seattle. In Colorado, Thursday, tomorrow night. Is that right? Is today Wednesday? My gosh. They'll play at 8 o'clock on ESPN, and that will wrap up the regular season for the Avs. We know the Avs are going to play Sunday, Mike, but we're still waiting to see exactly who they're going to play. The bad for me, we had the play-in game last night, and the early game featured the Miami Heat and the Hornets and the Charlotte Hornets. Hornets win 127-126 in a crazy game. A great basketball game. You're wondering why you look at the box score and you see Bam Adebayo only played 11 minutes. Well, early in the game, LaMelo Ball's like going down and like he's going up for a basket and he's going down. And Bam Adebayo like is in the air, lands down on the ground. Ball reaches out his left hand and trips Adebayo. Like, full on. No, he full on tripped him. Now, Ball says that, I mean, I think he full on tripped him. He grabbed at his heel. LaMelo Ball says he was like disoriented. He didn't really know what he was doing. At that point, he said he didn't do it on purpose. Here's Eric Spoelstra, the head coach of the Heat, on the play in question.
I didn't see it, but that I don't think it's cute. I don't think it's funny. I think it's a stupid play. It's a dangerous play. Obviously, our best player is out. I'm not making an excuse. The Hornets played great, you know, and they made those plays down the stretch. We had our opportunities to win. I just that's a shame. You know, he should be penalized for that. I don't think that belongs in the game. You know, tripping guys, shenanigans, and you know, Curtis was there. It's his responsibility to see that, and if it's not his responsibility, then Zach's got to see it. If you know, somebody has got to see that, and he should have been thrown out of the game, you know, for that.
Should he have been thrown out of the game? By the way, the ugly is the fact that the Rockies are in a 5-game losing streak, and we'll talk about that more later today. Should he have been thrown out of the game? You saw the play. I think, did you see the play that I sent over?
I saw the play. I'm taking a look at it again. I thought it was like I'm putting myself on the floor as the Hornets player, and I mean, you're bringing your hand back to your side, which is a natural motion. He could have grabbed him. He could have tripped him. He could have not tripped him. That's why I give it kind of a 50-50. I'm going to go back and see if I can find
it. I don't know. It looks like he almost picks up the leg. Again, you can't actually pick up the leg from that point. He's not strong enough. Bam's going down. That leg's going to... He's going to fall anyway. I don't know. Maybe. Maybe not. I'm watching this over and over again. I have a hard time believing that LaMelo Ball's going to... But see, Bam Adebayo's momentum is going back. So if that hand does come underneath that heel and pull away a little bit, you can see how he would trip. I mean, if he's just standing still and LaMelo Ball tries to trip him, knock him down, he's not going to move. But his momentum's already going back. I thought it looked intentional. I thought it did.
I mean, if you're looking at it from a I don't care about either team whatsoever.
I don't.
It could go either way. If you're Hornets, it's like, he's innocent. If
watch
you're Heat,
his
it's
hand.
That bastard.
Watch LaMelo's left hand. It's down on the ground. He pulls it up and grabs. It looks like he wraps his wrist and hand-ish area around his ankle. and then swipes. I think that's probably one of those things in the moment where you just do it. You're not really thinking that you're wanting to trip a person, but you're going down to the ground. You think you're getting fouled. Your arm's just flailing. Do I think that he, in his proper mind, is wanting to trip him? Or was it a bang-bang play? He goes to the ground. He sees a foot in front of him and just pulls it away. I don't know. I'm sitting here watching it over and over again. I would lean toward it was intentional. Should he have been ejected from the game? If you think it was intentional, you have to eject him from the game.
I'm thinking that it's hard to judge intent. He's looking in the direction of the player. Yes, I don't see a grab, but I see kind of a bit of a hook with the wrist. But I don't know. It's hard to judge intent from the camera angle. In this instance, I'm going to have to remain Switzerland.
Well, and then LaMelo Ball goes and hits the game-winning shot. So, I mean, and your key player, probably one of your best players, is out. So, yeah, that's you can see why Spoelstra's frustrated on it.
Adds insult to literal injury.
Yeah. As for tonight in the play-ins, we'll have the Magic and the 76ers, the Warriors and the Clippers, and then we'll take Saturday off. The Hornets advance, so they'll play either the 76ers or the Magic. The Suns are in the loser's bracket, so they'll play either the Clippers or the Warriors. So, yeah.
Is LaMelo Ball that guy? Is he the type of guy to play dirty?
I don't necessarily think so. I haven't seen a ton of Hornets basketball, I'll be real honest. I haven't seen a ton of him play. But for when I have seen him play, I don't think of him as a... I don't label him as a dirty player.
Yeah,
it's not like Lou Dort for OKC.
If he's a dirty player, I'd say 60-40, 60% chance, maybe 70% chance he's dirty. It's a dirty play. This, I'm still going to have to go 50-50 with the speed of the situation and how, like, moving your hand back to your body is a natural motion.
I
don't know. I don't want to judge intent, and I don't want to say he did this. I did not see it live, and I don't have any skin in the game for either.
I don't either. I really don't care, because neither one of those teams are going to be there. If the Nuggets make it all the way to the championship, neither one of those teams are going to be there for anyone to worry about. So I think if I had to make if I had to vote on it, it's probably... Did they actually call a flagrant on that play?
I don't think they called a foul.
They didn't call anything on it? They should have called flagrant at least. Maybe not kick him out, but... Yeah, I think it was a... When you say it was like a... Is it a dirty play? It's not a good play, but I also think in that moment, it's bang, bang, you're down on the ground, and you're just kind of reaching out. I just don't think that he was trying to trip him. That's where I'm gonna sit. Faith says he isn't known as a dirty player. It wasn't like a Dort situation. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Every time I've seen him play, I haven't really thought, oh, now that's just a dirty player. Like you said, it's not a Lou Dort situation. First Advantage text line is 888-530-0043. Texter here from the 970. I think he was intentionally grabbing the ankle, but it became way worse because Bam Adebayo was already starting to go down. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like he's probably going down anyway. And if he's not going down, then there is, you know, his hands moving his ankle in the opposite way, or his heel, in enough of a way to knock him down to the ground. So I don't know. I would be pissed too if I were Spoelstra. Because I mean, hurt his player and he's out for the rest of the game.
Yeah, I see both sides. I would be pissed, too, if I was a fan or the coach of Miami. So, yeah, 50-50 to me. There's going to be no win in this, and Miami loses.
There is no win. There was no win last night for the Rockies either, Mike. The Rockies are now 6-11, losing to the Astros, and the Astros broke a monstrous losing streak as well in that
game. Did the Rockies start that losing streak?
Maybe so.
I would like that to have happened. The Rockies starting
yeah,
that losing
they did. Oh, no, the Athletics did. The Athletics did. They lost the series to the Athletics, and they won one game and lost, and then the next, they lost to the Rockies. They got swept by the Rockies, and then they got swept by the Mariners.
Are they officially the Vegas
good.
Athletics?
That whole story? Not yet.
Okay, so are they still not having a home?
They're just called the Athletics right now.
Kind of like
they don't
even
have a name. Well, they don't even have a like a city yet. So right now, what we know about the Athletics situation, they're playing their home games at Soter Health Park in West Sacramento, California, for the 25. They played it in the 25 season last year, this season, and then next season, and then that moves their departure from Oakland. And their plan is still to relocate to a new stadium in Vegas, which is scheduled to open in 2028. So they're just going to be a nomad for three seasons. Well, I guess last season and then these
next
two.
I'm wondering if that's Sacramento State's field.
Yeah, I would imagine so. Yeah, I think so. First Advantage text line, 888-530-0043. The Rockies lose, though. And there was a moment in this game too late. The Rockies got they did make it interesting. You know, they got a run in the eighth. I thought they could have had another run, but you had Brett Sullivan, the backup catcher. He's rounding the bases. You got a beautiful hit, I think, by Rumfield, and you're thinking, this is going to be it. He's going to get around. Well, Sullivan, as he's approaching second base, the ball is off onto the right side of the field back in the corner. And no, it wasn't quite in the corner. The infielder just didn't make a play, and it was bouncing all over the place. Sullivan's running to second base, and he's like looking over his shoulder two, three times before going around second to third. Now, he ends up at third, but if he would have kept going instead of looking around, he might have been given the sign to go. And then we're going to have a photo finish there at home plate, and maybe the Rockies tie that game up at 7. But unfortunately, I mean, I'm not blaming that. That was just one of those things, man. That was one of those things that bad teams find ways to lose, even when they're playing not like a bad team. And that is still the Rockies. They've had some opportunities, but they have some close ones. They've had walk-offs and all that, and then last night was a tough one, too. They start off pretty hot. They're up 3-0. But then Houston scores six runs in the third, and Lorenzen just looked lost at the end, man. He looked like the loneliest person in the world. All right, more text here on that one. Okay, back on the ball thing. Should have been a tech. Sometimes unintentional plays are still worth a foul. Yeah, it should have at least been a technical foul or maybe a flagrant.
I would have given a flagrant.
Tech is, yeah, flagrant. I think a flagrant would have been appropriate. Flagrant one.
Whether he was responsible or not, like purposefully responsible or not, he was still responsible.
Still did it.
Whether it was an accident or not,
right.
Err on the side of safety.
Chris says, I heard some of Ball's conversation. Apparently he got hit in the head and didn't know what happened. Yeah, that's what he said. He was kind of like disoriented a little bit. I don't know. I can believe that. I mean, it's crazy stuff happens and
very physical play.
Bodies are flying all over the place. You're going to the ground. You see a foot in front of you and you're just kind of like, listen, it's not going to be one of those things where, oh, that cost the Heat the championship. It wasn't a positive play, but it is. You know, it is what it is.
If you're rooting for the Miami Heat, you're going to say that it cost them the championship.
Yeah, that we could have done it this year. This would have been our year. Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah, but like, if you really wanted it to be your year, just win more games. Win more games, be in a better position.
Texter from the 970 says they said that since there wasn't a foul called in the moment, they couldn't review to assess the flagrant. Right. This is why I say, if we're going to have a review everything. You might as well just review everything. Not unlimited reviews, but everything is open to reviewing.
Yeah, plays like this probably should be reviewed and reviewed upstairs.
What do you think of the Now, when I told you about the Major League Baseball Challenge stuff, what do you think of it? Do you like
it
now? You said you loved it.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. There are still officials. I call them officials, but they're umpires. There are still umpires who are just not good. And you don't know where they're looking.
Well, some of these are so close.
You think that they should have glasses.
Honestly, some of these are so tight. They're
so close.
Some of
them are tight, and that's understandable.
So, like, I've seen a few that are like, wow, what was he watching?
Yeah, it's the what was he watching that really needs to be called. And there are some of those umpires at CJ something.
I think it's going to make umpires – I think it's going to make umpires really – holds them more accountable. It's quick. It is quick. It doesn't take a lot of time. It just seems like every game now, I see it. I see somebody patting their head. Usually a batter is what I've seen the most of at this point, arguing whether it was a ball or a strike. That's what I've seen more so than the catcher or the pitcher, because those are the three guys that can do it. 26 minutes after the hour, we'll take a short break here. How do you stop Anthony Edwards? Anthony Edwards, when the T-Wolves won 2 years ago, when they beat the Nuggets in seven, that guy went off for some amazing games. When the Nuggets win, it was, you know, they held him at bay around the 20s. But there was another key component that really, really hurt Denver that might be different this time around. We'll talk about that coming up next.
What is the Dirty 30?
Give me a head with hair. Long, beautiful hair.
The boys aren't shaving until the Rockies win 30. Hear Rockies games and talk on Northern Colorado's voice. 103.1 at 1310 KFKA.
There's only one feeling like knowing your banker personally. Like growing up with a bank you can count on. Like being sure what you've earned is safe, secure, and local. There's only one feeling like knowing you're supporting your community. You deserve more from a bank. You deserve an institution that stood strong for generations. Bank of Colorado. There's only one. Member FDIC.
Hey, this is Sean Keeler of the Denver Post. You're listening to The Whole Show on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
If you're looking for a spot to go watch the Nuggets and the Avalanche in the playoffs, if you're not going to games and such, try Big City Roadhouse. They're doing great drink specials tied to both sponsored beers for both the NHL and the NBA. So during the Nuggets playoff games, so Saturday, they're going to be offering $3 Michelob Ultras. And then during Avalanche playoff games, they're going to be doing $3 Coors Lights available throughout their games. So just remember that. Saturday, Nuggets are playing, 1:30. They're going to be offering $3 Michelob Ultras. And then on Sunday, when the Avs play, we don't have the time yet, they're going to be hooking you up with $3 Coors Lights when the Avs play. So, great spot to watch these games. Big City Roadhouse. Dude, there's not a bad spot in the house. They have a great setting, great ambiance, TVs everywhere. It's awesome. Mike, what's up? How you doing back there, buddy? You got that look again. What's going on?
I am alive.
You got that look, though. That, like...
This is my normal face.
Well, you look sad.
Do I look like that look every day?
No.
This is my face.
There's a look you have when you're in pain. It's just like most people, they're in pain. They can kind of hide it. You have, like, it's very obvious there's something going on back there.
I've run out of ibuprofen.
So something's hurting your body. You slept too many hours.
I've taken all my ibuprofen for the day, and I have no more.
Okay. Well, maybe do some stretching. Stretch it out a little bit. Is it the back? Is that what's happening?
It's the back. Well. I've gotten old. I'm in my mid-40s now, and like I wake up sometimes, and I'm like, oh, my back hurts. I must have moved at night.
Yeah, mine's like, I actually got a full night's sleep. I wake up, and my back hurts. It's like, oh, I slept great, but now why am I locking up here? I slept too much, apparently.
Oh, maybe that's it. I was in bed. I was in bed a very long time.
I don't know. All right, let's talk about this series coming up between the Nuggets and the Timberwolves. Let me go through this with you, Mike. I went through like the bench production that really struggled for the Nuggets, no question about it. So game one, Minnesota wins 106-99. Anthony Edwards had himself a day. 43 points. Joker was good. He had 32 points, 8 rebounds, 9 assists, but he also had 7 turnovers in that game. So the turnovers paired with Anthony Edwards just doing whatever the hell he wanted in that game. Denver's bench was outscored by Minnesota's in that one, 23-15. And that was a problem, obviously, last year. You always talked about the Jokerless minutes. Well, when the bench was out, Joker was always out. So that's part of the reason the bench was just not good. No, bench unit. Even guys playing with the starters just weren't producing. Game two, Minnesota, rough one. 106-80. Anthony Edwards had 27. Karl Anthony Towns, remember, in that series was pretty damn good. He had 27 points, too, and 12 boards. You had Naz Reid coming off the bench, had 14. AG had 20 points in that game. Jamal just had 8. Jamal kind of struggled for a while in that series. Game three, the Nuggets take the series back. Well, they don't take it back, but they get one. They win 117-90. And let me go back. That second game of the bench, Minnesota's bench scored 37 points. Again, Naz Reid had 14. Denver scored 23, which was fine, but the bench unit for Minnesota just outproduced you. Game three, Nuggets win 117-90. Joker and Jamal both had 24 points. Joker had a near triple-double, a Sombor double, as Marlowe calls it. MPJ was pretty impactful in that game. He had 20 points in that one. Anthony Edwards, what did they do? They held him to 19 points. If he's not to that point where he's really just dominating the game, I think that's going to be the difference in this series, honestly. If Anthony Edwards is playing better than Nikola Jokic, then this series could go to Minnesota. If everyone else is kind of even and our star isn't as good as their star, I do worry about that one. The bench unit in this game for Denver was better, but still outscored. But they had, 117-90, so the bench guys are playing in a lot of meaningless minutes there. So that one was hard for me. I didn't even jot it down because, early bench minutes were fine. But throughout the game, it wasn't that much of an issue in the second half as the Nuggets just ran away with it. So then we get to game four. Denver ties the series. They win 115-107. Joker with a masterful night. 35 points for him. AG with 27. Jamal Murray with 19. Denver's bench was still outscored, however, by Minnesota's 31-23. So series is now even. Game five in Minnesota. Denver wins 112-97. Joker had 40 points, 13 assists. The bench outscored Minnesota 16-15. That was you love to see that. That was positive. So the Nuggets win game five. Game six Game five was in Denver. Game six was in Minnesota. And then you go and you just absolutely get throttled in that game. 115-70. At the time, everyone just kind of thought, okay, Denver's going to go ahead and win this game at home then, I guess. They had no interest in winning in front of Minnesota's fans, and they just lose 115-70. That was an awful game. You're thinking, man, it can't. If they play like that. They were down 31-14 at the end of the first period in that game. Chance to close it out. And you come out 31-14. Jamal Murray had 10 points in that game. Michael Porter Jr., 8 points. The bench unit, they had 9 points. And Minnesota was at near 30, over 30. So that was a rough one. Then we get to game 7. And what could have been? This is the game, probably the series, but more, I would say more so the game. Denver loses 98-90. They outscored Minnesota 43-30. It was all the Nuggets to have at that point. and just for whatever reason, couldn't do it. 38, excuse me, it was 43-38. And then Denver just fell asleep in the third period. Minnesota outscored Denver 28-14 in the third. And you saw that lead just kind of, you saw it go away. Denver was up big and gave it away. It just felt they were tired. I mean, again, for Minnesota to keep firing back, that's when Anthony Edwards, I mean, he had a slow start in that game. Jamal Murray was on fire, if you remember. Edwards didn't score much in that game. He ended up getting 16, but it was his defense on Jamal Murray in the second half. Jamal had 35 points. I can't remember exactly, Mike, but I think he had like 28 in the first half. And it was Jamal was a non-factor the rest of the game. Joker had 34 points, 19 rebounds. So what do you have to do to ensure that you get past this first round? One of the things that Chris Finch has been critical of his guy, Chris Finch, head coach of the Timberwolves, was a former Nuggets assistant for a year under Michael Malone. He gets really frustrated with Anthony Edwards when he gets blitzed, when he gets double teamed. If you blitz and do a quick double team, you don't stay on it, but just a quick double team. We've seen it a little bit more this year, but Ant-Man is more prone to turnovers if you can put a little pressure on him early in the sequence, early in the shot clock. I don't know if Christian Brown can guard Ant-Man one-on-one all night. Now, Brown is a good defender. His numbers, his defensive rating was 119.9. It's not great. It's average. Most of Denver's players that actually make an impact on this team aren't great defenders as far as the defensive rating goes. Peyton Watson is pretty good. Bruce Brown has his moments. Christian Brown he was better defensively last year than he was this year, and I think you see that with the ankle because his rating went up substantially. He's at 119.9 this year. And ratings can be subjective. I get that. Sometimes guys just make shots and you're in the right place. But if you look across the board, Timberwolves certainly, their guys' ratings are a little bit better on the defensive side. Like, you look at Naz Reid's 110. Obviously, Rudy Gobert's 109. Nobody's freaking out here. I mean, 100 to 105 is typically considered an elite defender. There's not an elite defender on this team, even though Rudy Gobert has won Defensive Player of the Year of the award. He blocks a lot of shots in there. I always look at like that defensive rating of how well are you when you got a guy in front of you? And can Christian Brown keep Anthony Edwards in front of him? Or are you going to see a lot of guys sagging off and trying to help out on Anthony Edwards? What's fascinating about this series, there's no more Karl-Anthony Towns. They had that trade with the Knicks, and so they brought in Julius Randle, who averages 21.6.7 rebounds per game and 5 assists. He's not the paint threat that Karl-Anthony Towns is, although Karl-Anthony Towns is pretty good from 3 in that series 2 years ago. I think Minnesota downgraded with that trade. The whole reason they put that group together with Karl-Anthony Towns and Rudy Gobert was to shut down Joker, was to try to slow him down when you get more big bodies in there. So what do? They move on because they go to 2 Western Conference Finals and they lose 2 Western Conference Finals. So now we're going to change how we do it. We're going to try to build our team not just to beat the Nuggets now, but to handle a team like Dallas with Luka. And then that obviously changed. So I like this matchup much better for Denver. Without Karl-Anthony Towns in there, and you throw in Julius Randle, I like this matchup a ton more than I did 2 years ago. Because it's no longer a team that's built to beat Denver. The only way I can see Minnesota really winning the series, I don't know, it could be a tight series, is it's going to be more often than not, Anthony Edwards is outshining Nikola Jokic, which he did a couple of times in that series from 2 years ago. But this is a team that's, their window is almost closing. I mean, it's to that point. Everything looked like the Timberwolves were going to run the West when they knocked the Nuggets out in 7 games. Then OKC starts to emerge during that time. So there's a lot of pressure for Minnesota fans. They're wanting to reopen that window. We know the pressure on Nuggets fans. They feel like we feel like we're in the window. As long as you have Nikola Jokic, Minnesota kind of feels like maybe that moment is past because Anthony Edwards is an amazing player. He's one of the best players in the NBA. But he's not, like, clearly their best of all time, where it's like, we have to win a title with this guy. They didn't win a title with Kevin Garnett and Stephon Marbury. So they're in a different boat, I think, than the Nuggets fans. Nuggets fans know Joker is by far the best player that we've ever seen. So there's different kind of pressures, but Minnesota certainly felt like 2 years ago they were in that window. And if they lose this series, I'll be curious to see what Minnesota does going forward. 42 minutes after the hour, Michael. Let's jump out real quick and get the latest on the local sports flash.
This is Ed Werder, NFL reporter for ESPN and a 1982 graduate of the University of Northern Colorado. Hope you'll continue to listen to the award-winning Hull Show, 1310 KFKA.
Michael, I'm going to ask you a weird question. So I just saw this earlier this morning.
Yes.
You don't know what I was going to ask.
Yes to the question.
You
that
said
you're
yes to that?
Oh, yes, you're
going to
ask me a question.
You said yes to that?
Yes,
that?
You're asking me a question.
Wow. I would not. No, seriously. If you would stop interrupting me for once in your life. The image of the NBA in your mind. Would it help? I read this report last night. It wasn't a report, it was a story that said it would be a good look for the NBA if Joker were to win the MVP. Because right now, if Shea wins it, you hate flopping, right? Shea is kind of the king of that right now. He leads it. Joker flops. They all flop. But there's one guy that looks for flopping. Joker flops when it seems like it's there in front of him, and a guy did hit him, and a guy did smack him in the face, but I'm going to embellish a little bit to make sure that the ref sees that I got fouled. That's the nature, the baseline of why they started flopping in the first place, was because they want to make damn sure a referee sees if a guy gets smacked, and then it obviously evolved into, I'm going to now make it look like he fouled me. Do you think the image of the NBA would be better if guys like Nikola Jokic are winning this thing?
Yes, but it's never going to happen because Jokic is never going to get on.
He won three.
It's never going to happen and be promoted like it would be promoted.
Correct.
If you have a more flamboyant, excitable athlete.
Joker's a three-time MVP, and national media talks about him like he's just a pretty good player.
And he's a pretty good player.
He's one of the greats, man.
He's going to go down as one of the top 500.
No, he's going to go down.
Just ask ESPN.
He's going to go down as one of the top 10, if not higher than that now.
Some say would top 15.
Well, he's already top 15. Another championship, obviously, I think that makes that case a little bit easier for him. I do think that you said this about football, that we put too much emphasis on the Super Bowls and such. That Dan Marino should be thought of in the same conversation as John Elway and Joe Montana. And on that side of thinking, I'm looking at it in the NBA going, I think we should change our mindset now, because I think the NBA, especially with the aprons and the way they're doing things, I don't know that we're going to see dynasties like we saw. I mean, Steph Curry said he thought Golden State was going to be the last dynasty like that, where they won four titles in a fairly short time. I mean, that's going to be tough to do, because OKC right now, they're prime, man. They could probably win a title this year. And I, without looking at it in front of me, I would imagine some of their players, they're very deep. Some of those contracts are going to start popping open, and they're not going to be able to bring back everybody. So they're going to have to make some decisions, and that makes it more difficult to have a three-peat or to win two out of five or three out of five championships, which I consider three is the number. 51 minutes after the hour, Michael will wrap up here in just a moment. I think it would be. I don't think he's going to win it, guys, but it would be good. It would be a good idea for the NBA if a player like Joker wins as opposed to Shea Gilgeous-Alexander. The whole show continues. We'll be right back.
Saturdays, four code words, one big prize. Tune in to Paul the Waterman. Saturday mornings at 8 on KFKA, and you could win a $1,300 reverse osmosis system. Don't miss out.
Hi, this is Jesse Kurtz, executive producer and lead anchor of the Mountain West Network, and you're listening to The Whole Show on 1310 KFKA.
All right, Mike. Smitty texting in. Your co-host? Stop. He's not a co-host. He's a producer. He's a board op.
Co-host.
He's a... I don't even want to say technical engineer back there. He's...
Co-host.
He's a button presser. Smitty says, your co-host is in his mid-40s with all his comments and anecdotes. I figured he was like a high school junior. Got you. Co-host.
Co-host.
You do kind of have that. You admit that, right? You have a personality of... Like, your interests are that of, like, more of a, you know, high schooler or junior high or maybe even toddler.
I do like Legos, but there are adults out there that love Legos.
Hey, full disclosure, man. Have you seen these freaking Legos they're putting out, man? It's like movie sets. Yeah. No. My wife and I may or may not have purchased a few of them over
time. And I may
have
purchased some of them from you.
The ones we're not using anymore. Yeah, they're cool. I mean, I like them.
And I may not have taken apart those thrown them away. I'm throwing the instructions away.
That's dumb. Just put it together like it's supposed to be. All right, top stories of the day coming up next. Diana Russini. We got that big story. That was a big one yesterday, but we'll hit it coming up next.
This KFK podcast is presented by Bank of Colorado. There's only one Greeley, one team like the UNC Bears, and one bank who cheers as loud as you do. Bank of Colorado, proud partner of UNC Athletics, member FDIC.